All right, let's call this meeting in order, please. Roll call. How come there's no Pledge of Allegiance down here? Shouldn't we do the Pledge of Allegiance?
We usually do it at 7. Right? I don't know if we do it at
11. I think we should do it at 5:30, too. Everyone please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance.
The Pledge of Allegiance is to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, please.
Colosimo. Koch.
Here.
Milshewski.
Here.
Cott.
Here.
Bunkhauser.
Here.
Frieders.
Here.
Teeling. Terulis.
Here.
We have a quorum.
And we have citizen comment on the next thing on the agenda. I don't know if anyone wants to comment now or feel free as the presentation goes on. Pretty much informal conversation, so if you have a comment at any time, just feel free to jump in. Now with that, I will turn it over to Park.
Thanks everyone for coming. My name is Bart Olson. I am the city administrator for Yorkville. We've got a 10-minute presentation or so, about 10 slides, kind of give you some background of home rule pros and cons, and then after that, Q&A. Me, the city council members, I've got Aaron Wilright here, who is the assistant city administrator too. So a bunch of different people to ask questions, and if there's any to look on at the end of the meeting, we can always send them to you afterwards. We did post this at like 5:30 to about 6:45 open meeting. So 2 weeks ago we did this. We actually just left the floor open, everybody milled around and talked, and then anybody wants to address the entire city council to say comment later, we can do that and turn back on the audio recording and make sure that's reflected. So here we go. The actual reference question that the residents are going to be posed with in about 2 weeks from now is listed up there in full text, and I've got a sample ballot later on in the presentation. But it is generally state-mandated language on whether the city wants to become a home rule unit of government or to stay as we currently are, which is a non-home rule unit of government. So what is home rule? Well, in 1970, when the state created its constitution, they created two levels of local government. Non-home rule, which is generally anybody under 25,000 population, or home rule municipalities, which is generally everybody above 25,000 in population. The exception there is that anybody of any municipality of any size can go out to a referendum and ask residents for home rule status. This is what we're doing. We're about 16,000, hopefully closer to 18 or 19 when we get done with the special census next year. So we're, several years away from crossing that threshold, probably the normal population growth. And the city council had identified some issues that they saw, in advance and said that this was a good thing to take for the residents and ask them for home rule status. In general, home rule status means that the local government can do anything that they see fit to control local matters, except for things that the state constitution says that we cannot do. As a non-home rule community, currently, we are only allowed to do everything that's explicitly listed in the state constitution for a municipality to do. So it's really a change in just the operating structure of the government, giving you more autonomy and more authority to control local issues. So a couple examples of nearby communities that are home rule, both either by population or referendum. So Shorewood actually last year was successful in passing a home rule referendum. But Oswego had become home rule a few years ago. During the boom years, they crossed the 25,000 threshold. They've been doing some different interesting things in the past few years, both as it relates to additional authority, but also in shifting the property tax burden off of Oswego residents and onto really everybody else that goes to the shops and eats in Oswego. But Downers Grove, Aurora, Balloon Brook, they're all listed there. And there's a long list of a couple hundred municipalities that qualify for this on different websites. Those are the ones we thought were, either similar or nearby to us. So again, home rule status changes our ability to address local issues. Again, we'll get into a list of things that the city council has looked at already and said we would either look at these after we become a home rule, or here are some issues that we're actually going to preemptively restrict us from operating with as a direct way. So we passed a home rule policy, and in general, everybody that has concerns about home rule generally addresses the authority of regulating businesses and residences and property, but then also taxing powers. So the city council passed a policy that says we're going to continue to follow the property tax extension limitation law, or PTEL tax gap. So we'll follow it exactly as a non-home rule entity does after we become home rule. And that if we increase any tax or create a new tax, whether it's a food and beverage tax or an increase in something like our amusement tax or telecommunications tax, we would do a public hearing prior to increasing it or enacting it, which is not something we have to do now as a non-home rule entity. We wanted to make sure those protections were in place. And then also we would continue to follow the existing debt capacity as a non-home rule entity. So if we become home rule, you're given much greater authority to issue debt, including doing so without referendum. And there isn't necessarily a physical limit in doing so. As a non-home rule municipality, you're limited to a percentage of your total property value in the city. We've said we don't really want to issue a whole bunch of debt, even though we've got the water issues coming up in the next 10 years. Choosing whether they move off of groundwater, which is drying up, or produce a Fox River water intake plant, which could be $60 million. But they said, we think we can do that within our existing debt authority. So, again, the concerns: taxing powers, property taxes increasing, and regulations on businesses. So, I already mentioned the home rule policy the city council has passed, so they've already passed something that says, if a referendum is approved, we agree to abide by the tax gap, the existing debt limits, and generally, within the authorities that we already have, city council has expressed some reservations as to putting in additional regulations on existing businesses. So while the authority would be there, the past history has been such that they've been relatively conservative with creating new authorities. So the things that we looked at and did say that we would look at or want to do at the referendum is one, we don't even really have to do anything to increase the city's bond rating. So we talked about this a couple times over the past couple months because we've actually increased our bond rating twice in the past month due to the rating agencies. That has produced a savings in the most recent refinancing we did of $60,000 over a 10-year period just on that one bond issue. So, we don't go out and issue debt very often, but we're always looking to refinance. And when we do have to issue debt to pay for projects, on a $5 million project, we've had estimates come back from our own financial advisors that have said, if you have the top bond rating or you get an increase, you can save yourself $100,000 or $150,000 on each issuance. So, that's a big deal for us. You have more flexibility generally to deal with your issues, and so bond rating agencies look at that and say you're a little bit better off, so you get a more favorable interest rate and save money over the long haul. We did look at incurring debt beyond 20 years, just specifically stretching out the term. With a $60 million potential investment in a Fox River water plant, the lifespan of that piece of equipment and plant is going to be beyond 20 years, so generally you try to match your debt service payments with the lifespan of your equipment. So rather than forcing it to be paid off within a 20-year period, you might be able to have a little bit lower payments over a 30 or a 40-year period. There is actually a cap I'll get into at 40 years. That's the most you can issue debt. Reducing property tax burden on residents by shifting it to non-residents. This is the Oswego method that I talked about. We've done some very preliminary calculations. If we were to implement a food and beverage tax similar to like what Naperville has, it's 2% on alcohol and generally restaurant food. We think it would generate $300,000 to $350,000 just on our existing restaurants. So the idea being that people that can afford to eat out of the restaurants are doing so. But then also, if you have good enough restaurants, you're bringing in people from outside of the area, and then they're paying the tax, and then you could actually reduce property taxes by the equivalent amount. So another example is Raging Waves. You know, they generate about $150,000 in amusement taxes for us annually. About half of their customer base comes in from out of town. So if you were to increase the amusement tax by a certain percentage point, whatever new revenue you generated, you could actually offset that with a property tax decrease. So that's something we've talked about each year since I've been here, so 12 or 13 years, just about using other people's money to try to get money from outside of the area to come in here to spend money that you then can invest in the area. Changing the size of city council, because we're not home rule, we actually have to increase the size of city council as you increase in population. You're able to reduce the size of city council as a non-home rule entity by one level. So technically right now we should be 5 wards with 10 aldermen. We have 4 wards with 8. So we're able to ratchet that at 1. When you cross the threshold of 20,000 people, we have to go up to 7 wards with 14 aldermen. So that's more salary, more voices in the room. That's something that generally city councils in the past and currently have resisted. So administrative adjudication improvements, that's city court for city tickets that people get. We have to do it every week. We have to pay an attorney. We have to pay unit takers. We have to pay court reporters to come in here and produce that record. If we were home rule, we could go once a month. Residential speed limits, we can reduce to 25 miles an hour by default and save ourselves some cost in doing so. As a non-home rule entity, you have to go through a lot of effort and spend a lot of money to get there, and it's not even guaranteed. Opting out of unfunded mandates, I mentioned that. The state can push something down on municipalities and say, you have to do this, and we're not going to give you any money for it. As a home rule entity, we would have the ability to basically say, no thanks, we're going to set up a different process to handle this issue, or we're just going to ignore the state's mandate, unless, of course, they tell you you really have to. They can do that by law, too. So, and then modify the zoning and planning process. Not something that we have specific there, that we've said, oh, there's an issue, but as land use petitions come forward, as property gets developed, there might be a case where we say, you know, no, the normal case law process that we follow something just doesn't fit for us, so we're going to make our own criteria. So moving forward, again, I mentioned the 40-year debt issuance limit on a home rule municipality, so even if we are home rule, we can't do 41 years. And then, again, the General Assembly, really at any time, if they pass an unfunded mandate, they can say, home rule municipalities, this is applied to, you can't exempt yourself out of it. And generally, they've been doing that. So, and home rule can always be reversed by referendum. There is effort required, obviously, to go through the petition process, citizen-driven petition process, but there have been municipalities that have successfully rescinded it in the past. So here's your sample ballot. That's what it's going to look like on November 8th. And there's a FAQ sheet, which is actually printed out here. It's also on the website, just with some additional links, and actually a copy of this PowerPoint. And then if anybody has any questions, again, if you think of something afterwards, after you always can just email me, and I'll try to make sure that it gets submitted to the public record. So with that, happy to take any questions if anybody has them.
Can you name an unfunded mandate that you guys can exempt yourself out of home rule powers?
Yeah, the biggest one has been the Illinois Affordable Housing Plan. I forget the exact terminology of it, but it was a big issue. Not necessarily in this area, because we generally meet those metrics that the state requires, but Northern Cook County, Lake County, McHenry County, some of the suburbs there, I think the threshold was 10% had to be mandated as affordable according to different metrics, and they were a little below that, and the municipalities just said, no, we think our housing stock is what it is, this has been a conscious decision, and we're not going to come up with a plan, we're not going to construct public housing, we're not going to do all these other things. So that's been the biggest one that I've been aware of. When we go down to Springfield and we talk to different council of government groups and other municipalities, it always seems to be focused on pensions. government employee groups will go down and will ask for sweeteners or just different issues with pensions. And depending on the actual pension program or what the sweetener is, you might have the ability to opt out of it if it's a local issue. If it's a state level issue, you really can't. But that's kind of one that we're all, I think, have recognized as a potential issue in the future.
If you can, if homeowner communities can opt out of the inclusionary housing ordinances, then why do the five that exist in the state are only homeowner communities? To make sure that their housing stock is about 10%. It's only homeowner communities that have these ordinances to maintain that. Why wouldn't they just accept themselves out of those?
I don't know. I don't know the five municipalities that you're referencing.
Which municipality? There's certain federal laws that no one can opt out of, and if that's the regulation you're talking about, that would be the answer. And they usually pertain to municipalities of a certain size, so that's why it would most likely be home rule.
Yeah, some of them might have had to do it by court decree, some of them may have chosen willingly to do it after the state had done it, even though they are home rule. So, and again, I don't know the individual certification behind each one, but we would have the ability basically to make the decision ourselves rather than the state enforcing on us.
So non-home rule communities don't have 10% affordable housing stock?
They do, and I don't remember which counties it applies to, if it's all of them or just some, and I'm under the impression that it does apply to us and that we need it, I think we're
correct.
17-20%, so that's an issue here.
Cool. Is the resolution that was passed to have public meetings and not raise property, is that binding or non-binding?
It is a valid resolution. And I mentioned this in the last home rule, and I hadn't mentioned it yet. So to the extent that it doesn't get repealed by a future city council, it is in effect. But I think the attorney would say, if everybody gets, chooses to retire and 8 new people that choose to sit on the board, they could willingly repeal that at any time as we attach to a referendum. So that is a potential risk, obviously, for the procedural issues. But it is in place and is binding.
Okay, thank you.
Anyone else? Yeah. If you don't have questions for me, this is...
I'm Angel, and obviously you guys know who I am. I'm all for the home rule. I've been a citizen here for almost 3 years now. And given the circumstances of what I went through and quite a few resident tenants that we went through at City Center Apartments, the Saki Bachers, the mold that was found there, if you guys had it in place, you guys would have been able to do more. But unfortunately, the landlord is allowed to repaint and re-rent those units to other tenants, potential future tenants, causing other people to become sick. Like, I was very sick. So I'm here tonight because I'm expressing how I would like you guys to become home rule, not only to benefit you guys or other people, but to help those who are renting from places here in Yorkville. Because now you have set a precedent for other landlords to say, hey, I'm just going to go ahead and paint right over it. The city's not going to do anything. I'm going to continue to make people sick. And if you don't have people who are working, they're going to not paying taxes and things like that. So for me, I think home rule is highly beneficial. I pay the water bill, I pay taxes, I work here, I live here, I love Yorkville. I've grown accustomed to everybody who comes into my store. And the biggest complaint was from everybody was they're going to raise our taxes. Really, honestly, they go up every year. I mean, everything goes up every year. And I'm the one who's certified, know that I'm going to be protected from the city. The city's going to be able to protect me when it comes to issues with tenant landlord rights or other issues that may come up in the city that you guys need people to enforce or to protect our children. And from what I understand, Aurora is home ruled, and they just shut down the school library because they found mold in it. That is something that you potentially could have done if you were home ruled, and could have saved other people from becoming sick. That's pretty much all I have to say. I'm going to vote for it, so. Thank you.
Thank you, Rachel. And on the issue of taxes, just to address that a little bit, you mentioned they go up every year anyway. It was not because of us.
Right.
And you look at your city taxes, we've lowered taxes 5 years in a row, at least the city's portion. And it does go up every year, but you have to look at the school district, the fire district, the county. If you look at your itemized tax bill, you pay just as much or more to the fire district as you do to the city of Yorkville, just as much to the county. What do they do for you?
I don't mind at all. I know that my kids are
going to
be protected and citizens are
going to
be protected. I'm okay with that, though. What
is our percentage of the bill, Bart?
It's like 6 to 7%.
Yeah. 6 to 7% of the bill, so that the if you doubled your taxes, it wouldn't have as much an effect on the bill as your school district going up 10%.
And don't think that just because we're not home rule, we can't raise taxes. And that's a fallacy. You look what happened in the city. What, about 5 years ago, about 2010, property taxes went up about 90% from 2010 to 2011 just because the city was in bad shape and couldn't meet its bond payments. So taxes were pledged as an alternative revenue source. Guess what? They went up automatically. So, I mean, we don't have to be home rule to raise your property taxes 90%. All we have to do is be irresponsible.
Can I add one more thing?
Yes.
Since the other people are not here to talk, but I've received, and I told Bart when I came in here earlier, that there are several tenants that have moved out of that particular community and still has not received their security deposit. So now, after cleaning those apartments when they're not really supposed to because of the type of molds that were found, those people have not gotten their security deposits back. And that is something where you guys could potentially step in and say, hey, you know, that's why I included the email with pictures of my apartment when I sent it to Bart. There's a lot of people that are still upset about that. That's not fair.
Yeah. Now, there's a whole range of landlord-tenant issues that you can do as home rule, crime-free housing, things like that that we can't even look at. And quite honestly, I mean, I think it's funny that our representatives in Springfield pick an arbitrary number like 25,000 to say, oh, 25,000 people, you're responsible enough to govern yourself. Now, where does that number come from? And especially from them. I mean, look what they've done to our state, to be honest, you know? So it just gives us more tools in the toolbox, you know, to address issues such as that. Is that it?
One of the most important things about housing, to support what Rachel said, crime-free housing is one. But home rule communities that I work with have what they call a landlord licensing program. And if you own more than two or three units, you have to have a license. In order to get a license, you have to inspect your units. And so they must always be maintained according to code, which eliminates a lot of problems, maintains neighborhoods, maintains, because so often these landlords are not residents of the community. The other unfunded mandates that when you go through the code, as a non-home rule municipality, you may only act and do what is defined specifically in the Illinois Municipal Code. The problem is, the code was written in 1961, even before home rule. There are so many procedural requirements that you must conform to. For example, if we decide as a city to sell a piece of property, you have to declare it surplus. That's the same for non-home rule. You can't, I mean, for home rule. You can't just convey property. However, if you're non-home rule, you have to advertise for 3 consecutive weeks. All of the issues of, and the legal description. So you've just thrown away $1,000 for something that doesn't really market your property, because 3 consecutive weeks, usually you would have a broker, you would have to do far more advertising than that. There are so many notices that must be, if you're non-home rule, published in the newspaper for reasons that no one quite understands. But that was the way the law was written in 1961, believing at the time, for example, that people still read newspapers and there were still paper items, and that all of these publication requirements, which are extraordinarily costly, was a way of informing the public. It's no longer applicable. Yet those laws remain on the books and cannot be avoided. I can go on and on about that, those kinds of mandates that not only do they not make sense, they cost you money.
Anyone else? Anything?
Mr. Mayor.
Yes, sir.
Kathy, you referenced the landlord tenant abilities, the criteria that could be put in place. That we haven't discussed that at any level here. We've talked about business registries and committee, and we've talked about vacant buildings, but we haven't talked about the need for or the application of landlord tenant issues. So. Yeah, it's something that is available, but it's not even something that we have considered or talked about as an opportunity. But truly, there are thousands of different elements that could be applied to home rule that are not available as home rule. And with such, we can decide to go with the landlord tenant and apply fees and make it cumbersome and hassling, you know, red tape, you know, government bureaucracy. That's not the intent of what we're going for, and clearly we haven't discussed it. There are a few items that we have looked at that may benefit to the city, you know, but those kind of things that people are complaining about, the taxes, they can all be done, yes. If you look at histories of other communities and what they've done, whenever there's an overreach from the government, the people have the right to take it back and eliminate that topic. And that's really where it stands, is power of the people.
Yorkville is very, very fortunate because our housing stock is new. Our housing stock is fabulous. We continue to grow. One of the things that most larger home rule communities have, and realtors are very, very, very opposed to it, is a when you sell an inspection program so that new buyers coming in, the property is inspected by the city and a notice is given. So as a new property coming into town, you're advised of issues that may be there. And that is invaluable, A, to people who come into town. You would be amazed at the property owners that fix up their property before they sell, because they realize it will be held and it really protects society as a whole. It has not been viewed as a regulating, but it's been viewed as an asset to the community, particularly in areas that there are aging housing that requires attention. Realtors are very, very much opposed to that because that will delay a sale in often instances until the property is brought back to code. But I've never heard a citizen complain about it. Either sellers know because they're aware of it, and buyers thank you for the blessing of knowing what they're getting into.
Doesn't that correlate with the consumer fraud act? Especially if there's something toxic or something that he owns a business, and if he's renting to other tenants or if he's renting to tenants, it's a business. You should have a license. I have to have a license in Illinois to have a business. He should have a license to be able to rent those units to other people. He should be able to be enforced by building code to make sure that it's up to code before he rents to somebody. Because now you just have 32 people's lives in your hands and nobody to enforce what just happened. That's my concern, because now you're moving new families into these units, and there's nobody or anything that can enforce him and tell him to tear down the wall and rebuild the wall and take the mold out. There's nobody there to say, take it down. Well, now we've got more families coming in there, more families are going to get sick, and you're probably never going to hear the end of it at this particular community. I'm not going to be the only one that's, I mean, I'm out of there, thank God. But there are other families that you'll probably hear from. They'll probably send you emails just like I did. And that's why I think this is really important. This is something that should be discussed. Because your citizens who actually live here and reside here, they work here, they have their kids here, they go to school, they pay taxes too. And my concern is you guys should be able to do something. You guys couldn't in that situation. And now this particular landlord thinks that it's okay, and now we've set a precedence for other landlords to say, it's okay, I'm not going to get in trouble. I'll just slap it together and re-rent it to somebody else, no big deal.
But now you've just cost somebody else's life. You've cost somebody else's children to be sick. That's an issue. So I'm hoping you guys will discuss that, because that's something that's important. Especially if people are coming here and renting here in Yorkville. I love Yorkville. My daughter goes to school, absolutely loves it. Now, I came from Naperville. The taxes there were crazy. I came from Naperville. I came to Yorkville because my dad's here. He's been here, I don't know how many years, but he's been here a long time. He talked me into coming here. So I hope that you guys will talk about this, because it's so important.
Anyone else? Aaron, what do you have to add? Okay, well, I mean, we'll keep the meeting open, but feel free to roam or whatever you need to do.